Evolutionary.org presents Evolutionary Hardcore Podcast with your co-hosts, Steve from the American Underground and Mobster from the UK Iron Den. Get ready for the most hardcore and underground info in the industry. And here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6...
Evolutionary.org Hardcore Podcast coming your way. Episode 165. Hadi Chupan, Steve Schmee here, and my buddy, the Mobster from across the pond. How's it going, buddy?
Oh, good. As long as I've got an arc, I'll be sailing. In the meantime, we're going to smash this one out of the park.
Yeah, it's always raining over there in Mobster's part of the world. Nice cool rain. So guys, we're doing this podcast about Hadi Chupan. He's a rising star. He's a Persian professional bodybuilder. The last 3 years at Mr. Olympia, he has been a force. The nickname that he has bestowed is the Persian Wolf. Current stats, 5'7" and a monstrous 240 pounds. His goal is to win the Mr. Olympia, and we definitely have to keep an eye on him over the next few years. And he's got a shot to contend for. It's really going to be exciting. And we're doing a bunch of these guys over the series that we are going to cover some of these guys, and these guys could be the ones that win it over the next few years. We're going to be talking about Nick Walker. We're going to be talking about Hunter Labrada, and we just talked about Big Ramy. So these are the main four contenders. And then, of course, you got Brandon Curry, who's always a force as well. So these four or five guys that we are talking about on this hardcore podcast, you can go back and listen to the Brandon Curry one. So Brandon Curry and Hadi, they were, you know, very close the past couple of years. So a little bit of, let's talk about Hadi's early life, Mobster, before I bring you in. Yep. He was born in 1987. That makes him, as of this podcast, in his early 30s. So he still has a few years left in his tank, in my opinion. He was born in the southern part of Iran, which is part of the Persian region, into a very poor family, poverty-stricken part of the area. And as in the case of poor nations, usually the younger boys have to start working in their early teens to help out their parents and help pay the bills. So Hadi was no different. And what Hadi did, Mobster, his first jobs were hustling on the streets, you know, and he'd worked some hard labor jobs, and that would help his family get money to eat. He took an early interest in bodybuilding, but a lot of people made fun of him, his friends, his family, as is the case in a lot of situations, because of his tiny frame. And we'll either include some pictures in the article about him, or you can look them up. But he was really, really tiny guy. It reminds me of myself when I was younger. I remember my arms were so skinny. I went out to play football, and they wouldn't even give me my own locker in the locker room. I had to share a locker with another kid. So you see this a lot. You see really, really skinny guys in their early teens. And once they hit puberty and they start lifting weight, they blow up. So a lot of people would tell him, hey, you would never amount to anything. And same thing with me too. I'd have family members make fun of me for having a bird chest and being so skinny, but you know, why do that? Why not try to show a person, you know, introduce them to weight training? So what happened with Hadi in his situation, he started working construction jobs. And as he hit puberty and as those testosterone levels started rising and those hormones started changing, he started to build lean muscle mass just from that. So the first time he lifted weights, he already had a lot of that body memory and that muscle memory from the construction job. So what he would do when he first started was only 5 or 10 kilograms. That's really lightweight. So, and he started getting some advice from a coach, and I'm probably going to butcher his name, Jamshid Ajwi. And he was only 15 years old. So that's how he kind of got into weight training and had someone kind of teach him the ropes. So before we get into our first competitions, you want to chime in on anything, Mobster?
I'm just thinking, it reminds me a little bit of Flex Lewis in terms of the football and the starting or whatever else. And of course, what we got to realize, this is Geezer is, as you say, he was a 212 athlete. So he's going to cross over from 212 to the Open. And I don't think people, the average person, completely gets the stature of these guys. 212 tend to be shorter. As you said, I believe 5'7". So he's on the shorter side, less than average. One advantage he has in terms of his muscle development is that, again, we're talking about the lighter framed athletes. The bigger guys tend to have bigger frames. It's simple as that. You've got small bones, any muscle that you add looks crazy. And of course, at 240 pounds on a small boned, small frame, he's going to look absolutely monstrous now. And as you say, crossing over from the 212 class, where he was a good athlete, into the Open class, where he's a great athlete. We're talking about top four, top five regular, top two, top three, with potential to win the Mr. Olympia. So it's a hell of a start. If you didn't know any better, you'd have said he had no potential, and here he is turning into an absolute monster. So yeah, let's get into the rest of his history.
So Hadi was an absolute beast in his country, and he started within 3 years of picking up his first weights ever. He was competing in his home country of Iran. He won a competition in his part of the country. And by 2005, people were realizing this guy was a gifted bodybuilder. In 2012, he won the silver medal at the WBPF World Bodybuilding Championships. The very next year, he took down the gold at the Asia Championships. And then he went on to win gold at the WBPF World Championships 3 straight years in the mid-2010s. Next year, he won Mr. Olympia Amateur 2017. The gold. So he was rising pretty quick and as an amateur. Now, the bigger competitions, he realized, hey, I have to start traveling to other places around the world, because he couldn't just stick to Iran. If he wanted to make a name for himself, he had to travel. So he wanted to build a brand. He wanted to get sponsors. If you're a bodybuilder and you want to travel, it costs money. The amount of PEDs you're using, the food you're eating, the travel costs, the hotel, all this stuff to get in these competitions, it costs money. So you can't just stay.
Let me jump back in here for a second.
Go for it. Yeah. I've noticed,
just talking about other athletes from the same neck of the woods, which you and I have addressed in previous podcasts, and even other federations that are not NPC or not pro class, whatever, with the guys that the Olympia competing, pro league. And that is that people outside of what we think of bodybuilding, generally speaking, which would be the big obvious competitions, the Arnold, the Olympia, etc., don't get sometimes how much support there is for an athlete like Hadi elsewhere. So, I mean, we've touched on it with one of the podcasts we did some time ago when we talked about an athlete that was working with a Saudi royal family and was being paid $400,000 a year. You've got a very well-known bodybuilder right now making a lot of noise on Instagram, and everybody wants him to come and compete in the pro league. And he says, I'm not going to because I'm rich. And what he meant was he's getting paid incredibly well with great support where he is competing with a completely different group, similar with the same IFBB at the front, but not what we call pro league. It's separate. So, and then, of course, something you and I talked about in the pre-show, which I'll touch upon now, and that is bodybuilding. And this is a big positive. Bodybuilding is blind, because as the majority of our listeners listening to this podcast are American, not all, but the majority are. And the relationship between the US of A politically and Iran politically is not good. Let's not muck about. We're not going to get into politics on this podcast. That's not what we're about. But it's not good. And yet here we are talking about an Iranian athlete with all the issues that have happened over the last 10, 20, 30 years or longer, being sponsored and supported by international supplement companies and federations to travel all over the world. And of course, to get a guy that's not supposed to be able to get a visa into the States, not once, not twice, but I believe 3 times this year was a little bit better than the last 2 years, last year's was very much at the last minute, not so much this year, three times into the States when I believe one of the lines I think you used before, and it may well have been on the forum or something like that, I saw a line which went, if you can't, the president of Iran couldn't get into the States, and yet here we are managing to get a world-class bodybuilding athlete into the States, even if it has been last minute previously, in order to compete at the biggest and best competition. So 100%, people have seen something in Hadi that makes them think he's worth supporting, not just in getting into the Olympia over here in America, but all over the world, all these different countries, all these different competitions, including, of course, in the last few years, when it's been even more difficult than it has been normally because of all the extra restrictions we've had to do with COVID. Back to you.
So, yes, Hadi, he's working his way up slowly but surely, right? And he won or got second place in several big competitions, San Marino Pro, Dubai Expo, IFBB Portugal Pro, Asia Grand Prix, and the IFBB Vancouver Pro. So this got him qualified to compete in Mr. Olympia in 2019. And Hadi got third place, just behind Brandon Curry and William Bonac. The next year, against tougher competition, in my opinion, he got fourth place, just being edged by Curry again and Phil Heath, who was in third place. Then in 2021, he got third place behind Big Ramy and Brandon Curry. So the guys got third place, fourth place, and third place the past 3 years. So 2022, let's see if he can crack the top two or even win it. It is possible. So I'm not going to make predictions. I think it's stupid to make predictions, but I think he has the potential. He's definitely still young enough. It's going to come down to, you know, what happens in next year. You know, will Big Ramy compete again? Will Curry compete again? So, and then you have to watch out for these other young guns coming, the Nick Walkers of the world and the Libratas, the Hunter Libratas of the world. So it's going to be interesting what happens next year. Go ahead, Mobster. Yep.
And winning, as I said in the pre-show, the People's Champions Award, which involves another check of some description and a huge, great big boxing-style WBO stocks, boxing-style belt. And so this is votable. I believe you can vote by text. And it's for people in the audience. I don't know if you can do it through the podcast, but it's certainly by people in the audience. And something I said to you in the pre-show, again, and this is just to say how colorblind and how apolitical we are in bodybuilding. You can have your opinions on those things outside of the sport, but inside the sport, we don't seem to care. So let's be honest, the majority of the audience at the Olympia, which may or may not have been down from the last year, again, because of COVID restrictions, would still be American. Or even if it is not, it's going to be supporters, fans, friends and family of the other athletes in the show. And yet Hadi wins the People's Champion Award, similar, of course, to Rolly Winkler a few years ago. So whether that's one of those, I think Hadi may well fall into this category, and we'll get into that in a minute. Sometimes it's the freak factor that wins that. I mean, Rolly doesn't seem to have what we won't call a Mr. Olympia type physique or an aesthetic. But when you see him up there in condition, when he comes in condition, he's an absolute monster. So maybe there's an element of that with the opinion of those people that have voted. But again, apolitical, don't care. He is the People's Champion for 2021. So he doesn't have to win the Olympia, but he's still a massive, massive crowd favourite. And that's why I say voted for the audience, voted by the people sitting there, versus being voted for by the judges. Back to you, Steve.
You know, looking at his social media, he's got 3 million followers on social media. Yep. And if you look at his Instagram page, that's where the bodybuilders usually have their biggest social media, you know, things that they put out. He's got pictures, he's got videos. I mean, his face, he's got that beard going, and he looks older than than his age, 33 years old to me. It is what it is, but he's an absolute beast. I think the beard and maybe
I'll tell you what that is, Steve, and this is, I don't want to sound too down on the guys. From the Middle East, it does seem to be one of those things, possibly the skin colouring, of course, that the younger guys tend to, I want the kind of that they hit puberty early. It's an old kind of joke. And I'll try not to sound racist when I sound this, but we got the 13-year-old Persian lad will have a full-blown moustache. And there's a joke, of course, about the women as well. But the reality of the situation is, I think there's an argument to be made, and maybe it's the lifestyle, maybe it's his background, having to work real hard when he was a youngster, etc., that that whole thing ages you. So as you say, the beard, the hair, the hirsuteness, even the eyebrows, etc., is kind of hairy-faced, to say the least, without the beard. It's going to age you. It makes you look older than you are. Physically, as you've said quite properly, he actually is nowhere near being, and we've addressed this on previous podcasts, his physical potential in terms of his age, his actual chronological age, because as we've talked about, the late 30s, early 40s seems to be the peak time now for your open class bodybuilder. So as you mentioned earlier on, he's probably got another 5, possibly even as much as another 10 years to completely physically mature. Facially, he does look a bit older. But I think that's the Persian background. It's the ethnicity. It's the color of the skin. They tend to have hair on the faces, etc., from a young age. And of course, the religious part of it allows for the whole hair, etc. But yeah, you're right. It makes him look older than he is, but physically, he's got another 5 or 10 years to go yet.
But he's a good looking guy for sure. And then bodybuilding. Yeah. You can't be ugly to go on stage and be judged. That is very important. I think he's an attractive guy. And I think he looks like a mature guy. He looks like, you know, he has that older, you know, look, the older face, but it's an attractive for sure. I wasn't trying to put him down. No. So let's kind of get into his shoulder controversy a little bit. And this is this happened to him, and sometimes, you know, you have this type of thing come up. A lot of it is marketing based, where it would be someone criticizing someone else and trying to get clicks and vice versa. And it can be like sometimes I'm not a conspiracy person, but sometimes they both kind of call each other up and they're like, hey, you know, let's start some controversy and, you know, so we can get more clicks and act like we hate each other. And then like they act like they hate each other. And then you're downtown or something. You see them hanging out at a bar or a restaurant and laughing it up together. And you're like, wait, I thought you guys hate each other. It's kind of like the WWE back in the day. They'd hate each other. And then Hulk Hogan would hate this wrestler. And then they'd go on vacation together with their wives. It's just like, this doesn't make any sense. But, you know, that's kind of sometimes what happens here. And
let me jump in here, Steve. And I'm going to do like a Q&A very briefly, because Steve and I talk about this on the forums, etc. Right. So, Steve, we know 100% that the advice that we would give to athletes, those competing, and specifically members of our forums, is you should rotate your sights. Okay. You don't keep jabbing the quad, you don't keep jabbing the glute. And there are things that you can do. So the argument then becomes, Steve, and you can answer this, do athletes, specifically competing athletes, inject performance enhancing drugs into different muscles? And the answer is, as you know, yes. So the idea that he's jabbing his delts more, perhaps, is a better question. They are all sight injecting. Every single athlete is sight injecting, even if it's only rotating the sights. So you can't keep jabbing into the quad, I'll do my triceps. I can't keep jabbing into my delt, I'll use, I'll do my glutes. I'll do this, I'll do that, whatever, right? So that's number one. We would advise people, as we've done on other podcasts, specifically that involves the whole injecting business, to rotate sites. So if you're rotating sites, you're site injecting. Let's not muck around. Now, of course, then it becomes down to do all of the open class, or for that matter, do all of any of those classic or physique or open class cert injects. Yes. And they've been doing it for a long time. Arnold had the whole thing with, did he had some sort of implants in his calves? Flex Wheeler had a back and forth with Sean Ray over sight injecting. And I told you off air, pre-show story about Steve, the head judge, getting another one of the professionals to say, your buddy Nasir's leaking backstage. And there are videos and photographs of Nasir El-Sombati, the late Nasir El-Sombati, appearing to leak some sort of oil on stage. So what we arguably if we think he's sight injected, and I'm actually going to say yes, specifically for his delts, because they don't always look, when the rest of his body is super defined and gnarly looking, his delts look inflated. He's not the only athlete doing that. And as you say, then it comes down to, well, then why are we giving Hadi a hard time when we're not giving this fella a hard time? Why, for example, when we've seen athletes, potentially Mr. Olympias, on stage with all of their physique looking dry and grainy and gnarly and whatever, and in one muscle, no. Now, either it's injured and inflamed, or they've sight injected and they've made a mistake. Now, that probably comes down as much to the physique and aesthetic on stage as it does as a psychology of an athlete feeling that his one body part's a little bit weak and then putting something into it. And then we're sitting in the audience, we're watching these videos, we're looking at the photographs, and we're going, that looks a bit strange to me. Does that look strange? Has he got five heads to his delt? Has he got three heads to his bicep? What's going on here? Hadi, if he sights injects, and I'm going to say yes, is not the only athlete doing this. Let's not muck about. Let's not pick on Hadi when we could pick on a number of people. And if we really want to be picky, we could stand all that. So that's a good example is, and just you, Arnold Schwarzenegger again as an example. So the rumor had it that he had calf implants or some sort of plastic surgery on his calf many years ago, in spite of the fact he was out there grinding, doing the Reg Park stuff with 500 and 1,000 pound on calf raises. And the argument becomes more supported because his calves are still damn good, even when the rest of his body's downsized as he approaches, or I believe he's actually slightly older now than 70 years of age. So he's still got really, really good calves when the rest of his body's got older and shrunk a little bit, like you'd expect the 70-year-old man to shrink, and yet the calves are still good, which does suggest either A, that he's had good genetics for calves and he did do the grind, or that he might have had some sort of suspicious activity going on there. And of course, we know from Sean Ray. Sean Ray did the whole thing where he was including Flex Wheeler of improving his calves. And argumentally, as you just said, there was a psychological thing going on. Flex saying, why is he giving me a hard time? Does he need to go x-ray? Hadi has done this. Hadi has said, if you need to, I will go to this place. I will have something scanned and you can see what's going on. But like I said, it's kind of silly, really, because I guarantee you that if there's 18 or 19 guys in the lineup, 14 or 15 of them have sight injected in some way, even if it's just rotating sights, and one or two of them have put an extra mil or two into one particular muscle or something like that because they've convinced that there's an argument for sight injecting and whatever. I'm not convinced on that particular stuff. Do any of them use something like Synfault? Yeah, I'm sure. There's probably half a dozen up there and stuff. Even back in the day, one of the ones used to be Escaline, I believe it's called, which had a kind of inflammatory, you stuck it in your calves and it kind of swelled up. The problem was it looked like you'd been bitten by a giant wasp or a bee or something. You'd have a certain red tint to them, but they would be inflamed for several hours, which was just enough time for you to be on stage. Guys, they're all at it. Some more than others. Some all the time, some of the time. To say that Hadi is the only one and we're giving him a hard time because of it, that's kind of crazy. That is, Steve.
Yeah, and a couple of the guys, what happened was after the Vancouver Pro in 2019, this was when that's what qualified him for the Mr. Olympia that year. That's what launched him to the next stratosphere. Another bodybuilder, Gustavo Barel, was the one who criticized him for his shoulders. He said, and I quote, congrats, a new phenomenal physique, not for me, unquote. So he kind of took a shot at him on that one. And Badell, you know, kind of talked about how using Synthol on the shoulders, it's poison and inflames the muscle and it isn't real muscle. And then another pro came out, Kamal El Gargni, and he also criticized him on social media as well. And in the article, I'll link over that post that he made. So, and as Wilder said, look, you do what you got to do. So I'm not sure picking on Hadi really is fair. Look, at the end of the day, if you don't want to do it, then don't do it. That's fine.
I don't like it either.
But there's no rules against it.
No,
so,
yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Yeah. I don't like it. It's very difficult to prove one way or the other. I mean, let's be honest again, right? We're talking about freaks of freaks here. So the fact that Hadi is super broad at his height, it kind of goes with the territory. If he was normal looking, he wouldn't be top two, top three of the Olympia. He just wouldn't. He wouldn't be in the open class. you could say the same about Rami's quads. They look like something from outer space. And that comes, then you're going to get that kind of theories going, right? Why is his quad so crazy? Why is his delt so crazy? Why does this person's arms look like that? Why does their calf look like that? They are freaks. They would be back in Victorian times, these guys would be in circuses, in tents, and you would come and point at them. In reality, they're bodybuilders, and something about them stands out. That's actually great for marketing. You go, oh my God, look at the shoulders or the arms or whatever else. Mike Matarazzo was a decent bodybuilder, but his arms and calves were for something else. His dad had huge calves in a wheelchair. And I've seen him in person many years before he passed away. He's a freak of freaks. So he's going to have stuff about him that looks wrong or weird or some kind of outstanding. And of course, what you just said, I would say, right then, why are these other guys making those comments? Did he knock Gustavo for a place? Did Kamal not get to compete that year because had he got the step up? Then they're going to say, what? So yes, Kamal is a all-round, small, but all-round aesthetic body. But I've seen this man on stage again, a Welsh competition here when he was living in this country. And his overall aesthetic is incredibly good. And that's the reason why he's a great, great bodybuilder, even at the age he is now. And Gustavo was a very aesthetic looking bodybuilder. So neither one of those two guys are what we would call freaks of freaks. They're not circus crazy muscle, whereas Hadi is circus crazy. So yeah, I mean, I think he does do something for it. It's not for me. I don't particularly like it. And in fact, his physique is not the kind that I would like to see winning. But on the other hand, the idea that he's the only one who should be picked up is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And like I said, you're trying to the whole mentality of guys doing stuff like that. Flex Wheeler is an absolute freak of freaks, especially back in the day when he was winning. Did he maybe do things that he shouldn't have done? Of course. But that you're dealing with Flex Wheeler's mentality, not his physique. His physique was world class. People thought that he was like just God-given genetics, and yet his mentality was to be in a particular place, not to think of himself in that particular way. So you've got arguments about guys needing the sight inject. You and I are not fans. It's not something we recommend. We would prefer not to see it in bodybuilding, but we're being real. It's hardcore, so we keep it real, guys. And the reality is other athletes are doing it. It's not just Hadi.
Yeah, if it's not Synthol, it's something else. Not like Bedell was you know, natural and not taking anything. I mean, come on. I mean, let's get serious, you know what I'm saying? Let's kind of get into a little bit really quick his nutrition and training. And then we're going to talk about a steroid cycle because we are running short on time on this podcast. So let's kind of get into his nutrition a little bit. He is a very strict Muslim, him and Big Rami. They do fast for Ramadan for a month every year. So that's one of the things that, I mean, I've talked about it a lot on the podcast, on my other podcasts, also on the forums about fasting and how it's actually help them with their, number one, it helps with your discipline. Number two, it helps with your health. Number three, it helps with your gut, and it can act, and it's going to benefit them over time for sure. So he does that. He also does he likes a lot of brown rice, chicken breasts, and avocado, good fats. He also uses a lot of supplements, and he does market them on his social media. So if you go on his social media, you can see some of these supplements he markets, as all these guys do. It's part of the game. It's part of the shtick to market these things. So, and Hadi talks about his diet. He takes it very seriously. He grew up, you know, very poor, where he didn't have much food. So he has an appreciation for food. So he doesn't have the need to go eat fast food, and he doesn't have that mentality that we see with a lot of spoiled people in our countries, Mobster and I, who don't have issues with food, but we choose to pick the wrong foods. And he doesn't have that type of entitlement mentality where I've got food nonstop. He's, you know, he has that mentality in his head. Well, wow, food is something that I have to be grateful for. So put things in my body that are going to be nutritional for my body. Don't put junk in my body. So Mobster, you know, get into his training. You had some new information on his training. And then we're going to talk about a steroid cycle.
Very quickly on the nutrition, I've eaten Persian. It's a little bit fatty when it comes to the lamb, the goat, even the camel. as on occasion. But it's rice. It's kind of the Mediterranean stuff with more lamb and more goat. And it's very social. So there's that element as well. So you have to avoid sometimes with the social element, everybody sitting around a table and having like an evening feast when the family gather versus eating through the day. There's that aspect. Training. Guys, his YouTube channel covers this, so you can go check that out. I wasn't going to watch all the videos. It's only so much pre-show research I'm going to do. But quite simply, from what I could see, he's a very high volume, what we used to call sometimes back in the day bodybuilding, pumper. Now, that can give a different look to the muscles. I'm not entirely sure. There's elements I think are probably in the off-season we're not seeing. And again, I didn't look at all the videos. There must have been that foundation with the work that he's done in construction. That kind of makes you gnarly. To add the amount of muscle that he's done over the years, it's not pumping. You're not doing light weights to get to the size that he's done. But what he's doing now, and this is from a couple of videos that I did look at, is a very high volume of work. I mean, literally one video that I looked at was 40 minutes long, and it was one kind of exercise for his chest with something like a Swiss bar. It wasn't a Swiss bar, rigged up to a cable machine, and he was doing different hand spaces, and this was like nonstop with no commentary for 40 minutes. I gotta be honest, it wasn't the most exciting video. And yet, if you're looking at his physique, what was going on behind the handles and with the work, as you could see detail, you could see grooves. So let's not muck around. We can get into the ins and outs of exercise, science, and all the rest of it. Hadi does what works for Hadi. I couldn't do it. I don't know that Steve would want to do 40 minutes of one exercise just for your chest, for example, there, Steve, even with different hand spacings, but it works for Hadi. So you should, and there's something else we've done on this podcast as well, very quickly, just to finish on training, look at an athlete that's similar in structure to you, and his genetic makeup is like yours. If you've got some sort of thin skin and you've kind of got his structure, maybe his kind of background, then maybe his style would work for you. Obviously, I'm more of a strength athlete, more of a weightlifter, so that kind of volume to me would be like death by pec training. I couldn't do it, Steve. But he blows up. He doesn't... I mean, let's not muck around. He's got a world-class physique. So wherever he's doing his work in Hadi, the only knock might be something along the lines of, if you have world-class genetics, you're going to probably respond to all kinds of training real, real well. And Steve and I both know this. There's a million world-class bodybuilders out there that as soon as I looked at a dumbbell, I blew up. As soon as I started training, I had 30 pounds in my first year. And this is all before PEDs. You throw that into the mix, which we're about to get into, and it's a different thing again. 240 pounds at 5'7", that's a lot of muscle on a small, small frame. So like I said, what he does works for him. By all means, check it out. See if it works for you, Steve. Let's get into the PEDs, the meat and potatoes of our podcast.
Yeah, so we can speculate Hadi started using steroids at a very young age. That's just a guess.
I think that's right.
Yeah, I don't have, because in Iran, it's very easy to get steroids.
Yeah. Easy.
I'm sure you can literally buy steroids at the 7-Eleven down the street at the
pharma quality.
No, but I'm just kind of being funny.
You've got some places in Persia, you can walk into the chemist, as you said. And I believe there's still probably in Iran, Iraq, etc., still, as it used to be in Greece, if you had an underweight child, you could go into Greek chemists back in the day and they would give you a low dose of steroid, I believe it's something like Anavar, over the counter because my child is underweight and he needs to add some weight. And this was quite legal and legit and all prescription, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, back in the day, Pakistan, Iranian, et cetera, test emph was the daddy coming on ampules from those sections of the country. Now, I doubt if you're right, quite properly in thinking that it's all pharma quality now. Probably not, but these countries were the places where we used to get that stuff from back in the 80s. It would come over land from Pakistan. It would come over land from Iran. So that's what we were using. I suspect accessibility is real easy. And yes, the temptation to blow up, to become a world-class athlete with the support of your community, with the support of your nation, if you are world-class, is huge. So do we think accessibility in Iran is good? Yeah, sure, 100%.
Yeah, and if you go around the country, I've been to the Caribbean and stuff, there's huts on the beach, little huts with, you know, little tourist, you know, things for sale. And you go in there and you'll be shocked at what's literally being sold there. You can buy, you know, any like things that in the United States you need a prescription for and doctor's note to send to a pharmacy. You can just walk into a little hut on the beach and buy. So that's kind of funny whenever, you know, I travel around the world and see what they have. But it's like that. And it's like that in these countries because their steroid laws are so different than, yes, than the mobsterized countries. So, you know, he had access to it very early. It's a question of money. You have to have the money to buy it because a lot of people don't. You barely have enough money to eat and pay your rent.
Yeah. That so might be more helpful.
In his case, he worked his ass off. He saved money. He had money to do it. And now what he's using, thanks to all his endorsements, he's got enough money now to buy tons of steroids, especially in Iran, because they are way cheaper over there. So we can speculate what he was using. The HGH insulin thing, I'm pretty confident guys at this level, you need to mess around with HGH and insulin. Half as much insulin as HGH. So 30 IUs HGH a day, 15 IUs insulin per day. I'm not saying year round, but I'm saying this could be something leading up to the competition that he was messing around with. When you are that small of a bone structure, as Mobster alluded to, so that small of a bone structure and you're holding that much muscle, you definitely need this HGH and insulin cocktail because they work in synergy together to build, to shuttle in all that food you're eating, right? Yeah. Instead of it getting wasted and getting not absorbed into the body, that insulin, that HGH works to get pumps it into the muscle, okay? I'm not going to get into the scientific behind it, but that's in layman's terms what's happening. And that's why these guys run a ton of HGH and they run the insulin with it to get that massive size. Another thing that they're using, and look, I don't know the exact numbers on this, but I know that they are abusing the hell out of trenbolone. And trenbolone acetate would be a good option. 1,200 milligrams a week. I mean, are they using more than that? At some point, I would not be shocked if they messed around with higher dosages than even that. But I think 1,200 milligrams is probably a happy medium. He probably is really flexible with the dosage. He might go higher for a couple of weeks, and he might go lower down to even as low as 400 or 500 milligrams a week. But I think in the middle somewhere is around the 1,200 milligrams a week. Another one that they would use with the trenbolone is testosterone propionate at 1,000 a week. And of course, you're going to drop that ahead of the competition. You don't want any type of water retention. You're also running enough stuff with it to offset any type of water retention and any type of, you don't want the muscles to be fluffy. You want the muscles to be as hard and as deficient of water as possible. So obviously there, you're going to use the other stuff that we talked about in this cocktail. Another one too, that I have no doubt they're messing around with is Winstrol. Winstrol 200 milligrams a day. That's an insane dosage. Even 50 milligrams a day for me shed the crap out of my hair, gave me headaches, you know, gave me those side effects that are involved. Winstrol is a hell of a steroid, and 200 milligrams a day leading up to the competition will dry him the hell out. And I'm going to talk about one more before I bring in Mobster here. Another one would be Masteron propionate. Again, the flexibility of using a short ester, 1,500 milligrams a week. Masteron propionate doesn't come with the androgenic side effects that trenbolone comes with. And it doesn't come, obviously, with the estrogenic side effects of testosterone. But what Masteron is a pure DHT derivative. And it's going to cause his muscles to harden up tremendously. So I have little doubt that the guys are all over Masteron. What a great steroid that for competitors. And the good thing about it is it's injectable. So you don't have to take a bunch of it like you would for an oral. And it does the job. Really the best injectable out there to harden your muscles in existence is going to be Masteron. What else do you think, Mobster, that he would be using in this pre-Olympia cocktail. Okay,
so we're talking, as always, Steve, and we mentioned this in the article, that we're talking about a competition cycle specifically leading up Mr. Olympia. You have to remember, guys, on stage, he's been described by pretty much every pundit there is as one of the most conditioned athletes on stage. I suspect, Steve, you're right about the growth hormone and insulin, but he's not making a mess of that. So a lot of athletes do. They ended up smoothing out and spilling over and all this. Hattie's not doing that. Again, his physique aesthetic is not my favorite, but you'll see him in certain angles and he's lean. Those intercostals and the details are there. The striations of the chest is there. So it's short-acting esters for a competition cycle. He's not mucking around too much, in my opinion, with growth hormone and insulin, especially running up the competition, because he's not making a mess with glycogen and reloading and all that kind of stuff. I'll run through very quickly the next two steroids, specifically 1,000 milligrams. Again, that's a lot, but again, we're talking about a professional competing athlete in the run to the Mr. Olympia of Equipoise. 150 milligrams a day of Anavar. That's a lot of Anavar, guys. I don't care. And again, for short periods of time as an oral, way more than I would run. And I like Anavar. It's one of my favorite drugs. The next four is when we get into the nitty-gritty in terms of what maybe is producing the condition that Hattie brings to the stage, specifically diuretics. And again, here's a guy that's not making a mess of these things. Whether he's got good advice or he's just a great responder, it's hard to say. He's working with one of the best prep coaches in the business, and that prep is one of the people that's managed to get him in to America this year ahead of time, which helped. It's just that different athletes did the same thing with regards to Rami, for example, in terms of ahead of time. I think Hattie came a little bit after Rami, but he still had a couple of weeks. Last year, he arrived on a Wednesday, was competing on a Saturday. This time, I think it was 3 weeks, I'm going to say, that he got to the country ahead of time. Plenty of time to adapt and get ready. He doesn't mess his conditioning up, guys. He's not making a mess with leaving stuff in too long. He's not making a mess by taking too much diuretic. He's not following up with more directs and more directs. He's not spilling over when it comes to glycogen manipulation and such like. Letrozole is an obvious drug in terms of needing something like letrozole when you're using those kind of levels of drugs as a professional bodybuilder. So the question would only come down to the amount, Steve. And obviously, again, does he look like he's got bitch tits to you guys on stage? Does he look like he's carrying too much estrogen and therefore is spilled over with the water? No. Fat burners, some kind of fat burner. I'm not going to say DMP. I don't think he's making that kind of mistake, Steve. But certainly something, probably one of the thyroid drugs, maybe, hopefully, for a short period of time. And that's probably key here, guys, in terms of advice. Run it short only when you're already conditioned. Don't try to fix what's broken, but just add that extra degree of polish. And, of course, the last drug, and probably arguable whether it's a site injection or rotation of drugs with the high levels of the gear that we've already mentioned, 1.2 grams of tren a week, and all the other drugs. Steve will tell you this, test proper specifically, it's you're going to be jabbing multiple times per week all these drugs. So whether he's site injecting a volume, half a mil or a mil or more, into the different muscles, possibly 2 mil, maybe even just 3 mil, in order to get the numbers into his physique. Off season, that's not so bad, but during the competition, it's probably shorter acting ester, Steve. I think you'd agree he's going to be injecting him multiple times per day for weeks running up. So there's an argument there about what's going into a muscle to blow it up. But yeah, we've got Synthol listed down here. Whether it's Synthol, whether it's a high volume of oil, one of the tricks, for example, and you'd have to get someone to help you with this if you was going to do this, would be get more of a carrier alcohol or oil and add that. Now, that just means kind of taking a lower in the dosage, but it's putting a bigger volume into the muscle. It's one of those things. There's something going on, in my opinion. So whether it's Synthol or Escaline or a higher volume of a PED going in into particular muscles specifically. And again, that comes down to psychology. And this is what we sometimes deal with, guys. Competition cycles and specifically competition diets. And this is the reason why so many of these athletes work with prep coaches. Isn't just because these prep coaches work with athletes and therefore they've got knowledge that goes over multiple athletes to apply to you. Equally, because that person is not doing a competition diet, so they can see you for what you are on the day and make things adjustments, but because when you are carb depleted, when you are dieting for a competition, when you're looking in the mirror and posing multiple times a day, you don't see yourself as other people will do. You won't see yourself as a judge does. And so even at the top level, even in the top 10 bodybuilders, Mr. Olympia physique competitors, open class competitors, you may well make the kind of mistakes that leads to accusations like site injecting, because you think 240 pounds at 5 foot is not quite big enough. I'm not quite muscular enough. My bicep could do with a better peak. In reality, you were world class and you won all these competitions and you're in the Mr. Olympia. So you are 100% top 10, top five in the world. And yet your mind can still play those little tricks that make you think you need to do something like the site injecting. I'm going to say it's quite possible that is exactly what's happening. And that's why we say, whether it's Synthol or something else, there's a little bit of something going on there. Back to you, Steve.
So guys, you know, we covered it for sure. I kind of let the cat out of the bag earlier. Our next two guys are going to be doing Hunter Labrada and Nick Walker. Yeah. And these are guys. Go ahead.
Yep. Up and coming. They've been described as the future of bodybuilding by a bunch of pundits. They're young, they are hungry, they are ready to grow. And I think Steve and I both agree that this is in the next couple of years, if they keep at it, if they keep plugging away. I'm going to throw Sergio Oliveira Jr. into the mix at the back there. If his head gets on right, if he can bring the condition. These guys are all under 30 years of age or just on the cusp of 30 years of age, Steve. So where they are now, another 2 years, 3 years, what we're going to see. So that's what we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at how they got to where they are and where they're going to go in the next 2 or 3 years. And we want to be on the edge with the Hardcore Podcast of bringing you information about the future of bodybuilding as well as the history.
All right, guys, so Hadi Chupan, episode 165. Mobster, take us into the disclaimer.
Please note, as always, guys, we are not doctors and opinions are ours and ours alone. It is our view and based on the many years of experience and views that we have on the topic. A podcast for informational purposes and entertainment only. The freedom of speech and the First Amendment apply.